Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and today's conversation is with Vice Admiral Jack Torsett, Deputy Chief of Naval Operations for Information Dominance and Director of Naval Intelligence. Also joining us from IBM is Chris Lyons. Admiral, information dominance requires evolving technologies to accommodate better information flow, but it also changes the way we view information. To what extent does the U.S. military need to move from a mindset of need to know to need to share, and what are some of the ways this mindset can be transformed going forward?
The nation is going through a change in its mindset. Prior to 9/11, we adhered to a need-to-know process, and that was based on protecting information more than delivering information to small segments of the Department of Defense and throughout the intel community. Protecting classified sources and methods was the priority. Following 9/11, we shifted to a new culture. It embraced sharing, and it was sort of a need-to-share mindset, if you will. But it hasn't been pervasive throughout the Department of Defense or the intel community. Some policies, some organizations wanting to have tighter control of information. So we've made good progress, but as you can see in some of the challenges in the national security arena, we haven't overcome all of those challenges. The new philosophy, in my mind, requires getting people, analysts, decision makers, facilitators of information to take that measured risk, where you branch out and you start trying to get information flowing to greater segments of the organizations that need that information. I think that you can transform the mindset primarily by having leaders, bold leaders, who embrace it, who demand that we shift from protection of information as the primary purpose to sharing it with everyone who needs to know. Clearly, the president has pushed that as a primary objective of his. And I see that in the Department of Defense. I certainly see that in the Department of the Navy, a requirement. But we have institutions that still embrace either the status quo or past patterns of dealing with information and who are still very protective. So it takes senior leaders and their demands to constantly put on pressure onto the organizations to get it to really shift. The greatest and most significant method to changing our culture, I think, is when you start having success. When you have success, you can't rest on your laurels. You need to take that, build on the success, have another success, and then create some momentum. And then ultimately, you will change a culture. But culture change is probably the most significant and the hardest thing to ultimately do in organizations.
You mentioned earlier part of your responsibility or charge, if you will, is to boldly introduce game-changing strategies and concepts. What does that mean in practice, and are there any historical examples that may inform your approach to breaking down those old paradigms and introducing new ways to perform?
The Navy is clearly not sitting idle, and hopefully you've got a sense of that in the discussions that we've had today. Recently, we've made some significant improvements in terms of delivering and focusing on the future delivery of unmanned air vehicles, Fire Scout, our STUAS, next generation of small air vehicles, electronic warfare improvements. We've recently agreed with the Air Force to partner between their Global Hawk unmanned air vehicle and our broad area maritime surveillance vehicle. These are high altitude, long endurance, 24 hours endurance air vehicles, and we are going to co-base and jointly man those squadrons. That's a fairly bold move, but they're basically the same platforms, so we're going to find efficiencies by bringing those organizations together. The maritime operations centers and making progress in those and linking those to the Air Operations Center, again, a partnership with the Air Force. For the long term, we're looking at new types of weapon systems and capabilities in the information arena. We call it a U-class, but it's an unmanned combat air vehicle that will be flying from our aircraft carriers in the future. We are marching out smartly in terms of investing in that. We are also looking to new mechanisms for fleet battle management. The Navy is not sitting idle. We want to be bold, look across a variety of different initiatives. In terms of historical examples, I can think of two individuals. One of them is a British admiral that was around at the turn of the century, Admiral Sir Jackie Fisher. He was first Sea Lord of the Royal Navy. He prepared the Royal Navy for the First World War. He witnessed the transition of their Navy from sail to steam. He introduced the battlecruiser. He introduced modern training techniques. And his legacy was one of innovation and excellence. The other example from our Navy is Admiral Hyman Rickover. When he introduced nuclear power into the U.S. Navy at the end of the 1940s, early 1950s, he revolutionized the U.S. Navy, not only in the type of propulsion system that we had, but how you recruited, trained, educated, and retained the officer and enlisted workforce that dealt with nuclear power. He had, we call it cradle-to-grave oversight of the nuclear power business. He broke down stovepipes to move the Navy forward. The examples that he's given us are perfect for the information age. It's not nuclear power that we're trying to deal with. It's information. And many of the lessons from Rickover are extremely valuable for us today.
Admiral, the Next Generation Enterprise Network, or NGEN, will replace the Navy's and Marine Corps' internet as the backbone for business and administrative needs. Could you tell us more about the plans for the Next Generation Enterprise Network? How do you see the capabilities of NGEN evolving?
Next Generation Network is basically a single, secure, and we think it's going to be a more cost-effective network. The Navy, the government, will own the network. Today, we've outsourced our primary network, NMCI, Navy Marine Corps Intranet. And the difference there is that we're going to treat our networks as a true command and control system. As we've talked about the information age, if your networks are not secure, if you don't have oversight and insight and ability to deal with your network, then you're at risk in the future. So we went down one path with NMCI. Our approach with NextGen is for us to own and operate and command and control that network. The most significant thing about NextGen is not just the approach we're taking with that network, but the fact that we have other networks. Next Generation Network is an ashore network. We have multiple afloat networks right now. We want to consolidate and converge into a single integrated, interoperable network that's ashore, afloat, and also connects our overseas bases. So it's going to cost us some money. It's going to take us some time to get there. But we have a vision, an architecture for migrating from the current civilian-owned, Navy-leased, if you will, network system to completely government-owned, integrated. We think that there will be great efficiencies, that in the end it will cost us less money. The hurdles, though, are going and transitioning from the current network architecture that we have to the future.
I'd like to ask, in pursuing your mission, would you elaborate on your interactions with the Department of Navy's Chief Information Officer, who is actually on top of both the Marine Corps and the Navy?
While the CNO has given me and my staff responsibility for the requirements, the policy, the resources, I don't have responsibility for operations. In terms of CIO, Chief Information Officer responsibilities, I have some component of those, but there is a Department of the Navy, CIO, who has responsibilities for both the Navy and the Marine Corps. So I'm in a subordinate function there, and I take policy guidance from that Don CIO. Issues like compliance with congressional and service mandates, Clinger-Cohen Act, Federal Information Security Management Act, the Don CIO has that lead and responsibility, and our staff takes the lead from them and then follows and then executes that guidance. We and my staff have responsibility for the architectures, the capabilities, the portfolios and strategies, implementation, if you will, while the Don CIO sets up above us, working directly for the Secretary of the Navy, interfacing with the Department of Defense Chief Information Officer. So I think we've got a good mechanism. It'd be safe to say that neither the Marine Corps and their communications, Deputy Don CIO and myself and the Don CIO, we don't always see eye to eye on everything, but we sit down, we communicate, and ultimately we will solve our problems together as a cohesive group, just like the various services working with the Department of Defense CIO work together to solve issues.
So do you think that there's an effective structure within the Navy to improve IT Navy-wide? Is the fact that you are both the N2 and you have N6 responsibility, is that improving that governance within the Navy?
I think we have an effective structure, but I am also convinced that we need to make continued changes in our structure. I think we have still some holes in our governance. I think we have some ambiguity still in responsibilities. The creation of the N2N6 has helped part of that on the Navy staff. But if you look out across the Navy and you look at our Systems Command, SPAWAR, the Space and Warfare Systems Command, and you look at our program executive offices, we have And we communicate an awful lot, but I think we need to make some changes in processes. I don't know whether we need to make changes in organizational structure, but certainly our processes are not as refined as we need to. So we've had this N2N6 structure up and running for 9 months, and I basically deferred looking at overarching governance and looking between some of these other organizations and seams that I still see, deferred until about this time to start tackling them because I had other priorities. And now it's time to tackle that. So you're very perceptive because we don't have it completely right. We're headed in the right direction, but still progress needs to be made.
The Navy's multitude of appropriation funding streams and their sponsors make it difficult for an organization to invest and then be able to reinvest the savings. This has been an issue in the federal government, I think, for a long time. If a budget-run organization, if you don't spend it, you lose it. And if you save some money, how do you reap the benefits of that? Are there any investments that N2N6 is planning to make for cost reduction efforts that will be beneficial to the Navy as a whole?
There are. And let me answer that question after I go back and I'll touch on a DOD CIO issue. The Department of Defense CIO has recently held a meeting with all the service CIOs and the service leads for communications and information and has talked about changes to the acquisition system. And we all are in a complete agreement with the DOD CIO that we need to have a more streamlined, more agile acquisition system. And the current acting DOD CIO, Ms. Cheryl Roby, is contemplating some initiatives that will test new mechanisms for us to be a little bit more quicker and agile. And instead of procuring systems, IT systems that take multiple years, 4, 5, 6, 7 years to acquire, try to get things acquired in about an 18-month to 24-month time frame. So we're all very supportive of that. She's going to take a little bit of risk, managed risk, I think, as she moves forward. But I think that is great that we've got that leadership across DOD. In terms of your question, in the Department of the Navy, we're looking at consolidating our afloat networks. In fact, we have our system is called Consolidated Afloat Networks. We're looking at consolidating ashore data centers to try and achieve some efficiencies and reap some dollars. We're looking at moving towards more unmanned and unattended surveillance sensors and capabilities because manpower is really expensive. And if you can move to an unmanned capability where the support infrastructure is small, doesn't require lots of manpower, then you can reap benefits there. Same thing with our unmanned air systems, as we are going to move forward there because the costs associated with manning air systems are very large. An example would be our EP-3 specialized reconnaissance aircraft. Large number of people on the back end, they're doing special reconnaissance work. We need to remote the flows of information from unmanned sensors to assure consolidated nodes where you can group people together and benefit from a reduced manpower pool, but one that is very, very specialized in skills. Right now, we put a lot of people up in the air, put a lot of people on ships, and it's not a very efficient or effective way to deal with intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance. And then finally, I mentioned the Air Force and the Navy looking to a new model for Global Hawk and our broad area maritime surveillance. Great potential for efficiencies there if we get that organizational alignment down properly.
What about the future of information dominance? We will ask Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett, Deputy Chief of Naval Operations for Information Dominance and Director of Naval Intelligence, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.